Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Mraz. Today's show was fuller than me after an NFL Sunday. Enjoy the takes and laughs in the best of the DA show.
Speaking of, the biggest storyline around the NBA last night was James Harden's return to Houston. His first chance to play against his former teammates since forcing his way out of town a couple of months ago and into the Brooklyn Nets lineup. The Nets, not surprisingly, going to Houston, get an easy victory. Brooklyn's been playing well, and the Rockets have not. Jeez, the Rockets have just been an absolute mess. The losing streak continues going into the break, and the Rockets have just been rudderless since they traded away James Harden. You could argue when they had James Harden, they were rudderless. The beard once again makes it look easy, drops a triple-double, and even pregame had a tribute video delivered to him from the Rockets organization on the Jumbotron. So it was sweet music and a good night to be James Harden. Now, we remember early in this season, Harden was miserable. He looked like he was wearing a fat suit. He was just going through the motions, saying the team wasn't good enough. His teammates weren't good enough. He wasn't happy there and was going to do anything possible to force his way out. And now it's March, and boy, Harden looks really, really happy. Harden looks really, really comfortable. And Harden's playing amazing basketball, even though his scoring isn't where it once was with the Rockets. His overall playmaking is beyond. So what exactly has motivated James Harden to become this version of himself? It's where we begin. Your cold open.
Harden now. Left wing, front court, three on the way. Good! James Harden with a three. He's got 27. And Houston needs a timeout. The net lead back up to 16.
All of it goes back to one thing, and it's James Harden and his attitude. He embraced this. He came in with a positive mentality. I think he recognizes that the window of opportunity is now. And the smile has been beaming throughout his time in Brooklyn. I think happiness and joy more than anything else. He's just enjoying the hell out of this experience.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That play-by-play was courtesy of Nets Radio, and that was Ian Eagle. Now, Ian calls Nets games and has for many, many years on the YES Network, and Ian joined us yesterday morning here on the show. And that was his observation about James Harden. It is a bizarre scenario, in my estimation, watching Harden do this. Because while James Harden's always been an amazing offensive weapon, while Harden's scoring ability can never be, ever, ever be questioned, I don't think we saw a, quote, happiness out of James Harden in most of his Rockets career. I think the pressure of not winning, I think year after year, perhaps knowing that the Warriors were just that much better, or that LeBron's teams were that much better, and the playoff exits had started to stack up with Harden. And Harden has a huge hand in those playoff exits. His playoff resume in elimination games has been a disaster. And part of the reason that the Rockets blew that 3-1 series lead and then 3-2 series lead against the Warriors was the fact that James Harden did not deliver when it mattered most. So he has a responsibility and a hand in those flameouts. But it seemed like Harden may have known in Houston that his best and their best of the regular season was not going to add up to a postseason championship. And so whatever that was, it always felt like Harden was reserved, maybe sometimes too casual, maybe sometimes just not motivated or inspired enough, and certainly not inspired enough by his teammates. And maybe that's also why James Harden kept changing teammates. And that's why Daryl Morey kept changing his teammates and running mates. Whatever it was, the happiness or the joy or the positive attitude really wasn't existent in Houston for most of his tenure there. Certainly not the last couple of seasons. And now the body language is so good. And watching the Nets last night and watching the Nets throughout this season, you can just see all of the things that many of us were concerned about with Brooklyn when they traded for James Harden: a sensitive Kevin Durant, a perplexing Kyrie Irving, and a sullen James Harden, that was going to be combustible, that the attitudes were not going to work, and the moment that something went wrong, it was all going to go wrong, especially with a first-time head coach in Steve Nash. And that just hasn't been the case. Now, I'm not saying that the Nets have dealt with some great lows or adversity, so maybe it'll happen when they do face adversity. But the one thing you saw last night was that it just felt like everything was great. Everything is great. Everything is great. Everything is great. You know, Kyrie Irving splitting defenders and dishing off. DeAndre Jordan making the extra pass. You had everybody getting into the mix. Nicholas Claxton finishing off some great passes from Harden and company. And then Harden, the moment that Houston went on that 10-0 run in the fourth quarter, it was, all right, boom, drive down, step back three. In your eye, we're now back up by 10 points. And, you know, every time they needed a basket, Harden just seemed to make the perfect pass or to make the perfect play. And it just seemed so easy. Everything seems so easy right now for the Nets, and they don't have Kevin Durant. I guess that joy or that happiness that Harden's playing with right now is a fresh start. He must feel like he's got teammates that can carry the load when he can't. He must feel like this is his first opportunity, maybe in years, where he's got a legitimate chance at a championship and he believes it. And maybe him believing it's the most important part. It doesn't say a lot for Harden necessarily that in Houston he could have teammates ranging from Dwight Howard to Chris Paul to Russell Westbrook and this year John Wall, and maybe never believing that they were good enough. And then suddenly this year, in a couple of months, believes they absolutely are. Maybe that doesn't say a lot about him, but that to me is the change. And even last night, post-game interview on ESPN, and the question begins with the boos that he heard from the crowd and how he was able to kind of digest all that. And he just kind of laughs it off. Ha, 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 ha. Ha, 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 ha. They're playing a tribute video before the game. Now, by the way, he was absolutely in the wrong for his behavior in trying to get out of Houston. And yet they put together a tribute video for him. I mean, he embarrassed the organization, embarrassed ownership, embarrassed the roster, embarrassed the coaching staff, embarrassed the front office. It's embarrassing that his first moment back, they're going to play a tribute video to him. And there he is, kind of looking up, kind of not. Hey, I'm here. I'm here to ball. I mean, it's like nothing is going to get to him, both good and bad. And he's just playing with that lightness, and it has helped his game to go to a next level to where he clearly knows he doesn't have to do everything. He can distribute, he can rebound, he can run the point, he can bring it down, he can shoot when he wants to, he doesn't have to shoot, but that he's got a team that somehow he believes in now, and it has made all the difference in his game. Easy victory for the Nets last night in Houston as Harden's return to his former city goes swimmingly well. Here is your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. Mraz, you're a huge Nets fan. You've watched, my guess is, almost every game this season because it's been a new kind of expectation in Brooklyn Nets fan in Brooklyn Nets fandom. So what have you seen from Harden since the trade?
First of all, he's way more awesome, I think, than I even appreciated in Houston. But with that being said, I think you hit on something really important, and that was that no matter how many times he was in the MVP conversation winning MVPs, no matter how good a regular season the Rockets had, he probably thought like the rest of us thought fan-wise and media-wise, which was they weren't going to get past the Warriors. They weren't going to get past these other teams because he might have had a great duo with Chris Paul, but he knew it just wasn't enough because of the era he's playing in the NBA. And now he has been in the NBA when he's seen a Celtic Big Three, a Heat Big Three, the Warrior Big Three. And those are the teams inevitably getting the hardware most of the time here. And now he has found his way into one of those situations. So if something goes awry in a big game and he didn't produce and he didn't go off for a triple-double, well, now it's not always on him. He was Mr. Rocket, where if they lost, it was 100% on him. If they lose and he didn't have a big game, you're going to have two other stars that are going to have to shoulder that too and ask, could they do enough? So I think that part of it makes it a little more comforting and allows him to exhale. And as a result of him exhaling, he's playing even more free and maybe even looking better than he ever has.
I think so. I think scoring-wise in Houston, he could be more dominant, but because he doesn't have to, we're now seeing his other bevy of skills. You know, without having to go for 35 or 38 or 40 points, you're watching what James Harden has always been able to do, which is do far more than just draw fouls and get to the free throw line. And it's kind of amazing to watch his playmaking these days, isn't it? Because we've always seen him as a singular scorer. And now that it's almost like he's focusing more on passing instead of scoring, you see just how unbelievably talented he is as a passer and as a court vision guy.
Right, and he's always been technically a good passer. He has, people have noted that, but the problem is, inevitably, almost every series in Houston, despite his passing, had to end up with it coming back in his hands. They had a shot for them to win a game. Now it doesn't have to be. His passing is almost so flawless and so effortless at times that it's actually more mesmerizing than his scoring to me in his time with Brooklyn. I hate to use it. It's like the beautiful game, watching James Harden pass the ball and move the ball up court. It's unbelievable.
Well, the Rockets offense was also weird. It was this kind of experiment to see if basketball could work from simply driving to the basket and or kicking out for a three. And so his passes, oftentimes his best passes, were simply driving to the basket, throwing his body at the basket, and then chucking it out to the three-point line and seeing if the Rockets could hit that. This is much more in a flow of an offense. It's much more in a traditional basketball sense, finding the open man versus just everybody fan out around the three-point line and just kind of wait for Harden to get it to you with a cross-court pass. It's amazing. Now, last night's not a great indicator of how good the Nets can be because the Rockets are so bad, but don't the Nets just make it look easy on some nights? I mean, and even when the Rockets made that run of the fourth quarter, it was like, okay, all right, let's hit a couple of buckets and let's extend this back out to 15.
It didn't matter. And I know a lot of fans will hate it because they probably hate some of these guys on the Nets. But for me, it's just, it's unbelievable to watch. It's a beautiful thing. It's an effortless effort. Every single night, it seems like they've been clicking ever since that West Coast trip. And as you mentioned, we haven't even seen Kevin Durant in 2 weeks. You know, when he comes back, I have no problems assuming that obviously Harden and Kyrie are just going to mesh and continue to do their thing. Like, that's the thing. You don't even have to worry about when Durant comes back in any more chemistry issues the way they've played hotly without him.
This team's scary. I mean, the Sixers are really, really good, obviously. But this Nets team is scary because if they can play like this with such casual speed and comfort and chemistry, and then you add one of the greatest players ever in Kevin Durant to it. And I don't think the Nets will go sideways with Durant because I think Durant learned a lot of the lessons of not being the problem, just being part of the solution when he was in Golden State. So if the Nets are clicking right now and Kyrie's happy and Harden's happy, I think Kevin Durant will find a way to just kind of complement that instead of needing it to go through him, needing to be the star. I don't know about Kyrie's attitude because Kyrie's Kyrie, but it does feel like Kevin Durant and James Harden are happy to win. That's the biggest thing for them. And if they're just happy to win, they just set this unbelievable stage for the Nets to be dominant. And it's also wild that the Nets could trade away all of those assets, all of those players. And yet, I mean, they just, when you have these types of stars, they just find the next group of assets. Like suddenly Nicholas Claxton is a good piece to the puzzle.
It's unbelievable. He's totally filled the void of Jared Allen. And also, if they didn't trade for James Harden, where would they have been with the Durant, obviously, then the COVID, then the injuries? Where would they be right now? And how happy would Kyrie be if they were struggling and he was the only star having to play in and out? So we could talk about all the assets they gave up. I don't know where this Net team would not be sitting in the two seed had they not made that trade right now, knowing what happened with Durant.
It's a masterstroke, and I doubted it. I doubted it. I doubted it. But it has paid enormous dividends, and they could win a championship with James Harden, very obviously.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
And remember, you can listen to the DA show on demand. Listen to us whenever you want to listen. It's DA on demand by downloading our podcast. Listen to the full show, full hours, full episodes are available there. Also, the best of the show is available there as well every single day. A 1 hour plus bite-sized version of the DA and the PGP, the permission granted podcast, the show about the show. All available on our podcast feed. Just search The DA Show on your favorite podcast platform. We begin last night in Queens for St. John's basketball. Big East action against Providence. And on the CBS Sports Network, our friend Andrew Catalan delivers a signature rim-rattling call.
Seconds on the shot clock. Duke, the lob.
Watson! Oh! Hello, March! What a play!
Hello, March! I love it. He's seeing things. We're seeing things. Hello, March! La, la, la.
Hello, March!
Hello! And hello to you too, March. Goodbye, February. That's over. We've moved on. Now, it's March time. Hello, March.
Hello, March.
Now, I don't know if it's Dave Friedman's If You're Not Making Tacos, I Don't Love You. I'm not sure it ranks up there with Dave Friedman yelling Brandon Whedon's a bum or Have Fun With Your Marriage after a slam dunk by Winthrop. But I can tell you, for our March Madness purposes, hello, March. Is going to be quite fine when we get that bebop of the NCAA tournament. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
Hello, March!
Hello, March!
Brandon Whedon's a bum!
February was sluggish. March has got some action.
March!
March! Jim Boeheim and the Syracuse Orange get an important victory last night at the Carrier Dome over Clemson. They had lost badly to Clemson on the road earlier in the season. Now, Syracuse needs to get some wins under their belt late in this regular season into the ACC tournament to make their way inside the bracket of 68. They've been on the bubble. Stop me when you've heard this story before. Been on the bubble for most of this season. But they've gotten a win over UNC a couple of nights ago. Now a victory over Clemson. Those are good victories for their resume. So you'd think that Jim Boeheim will be pretty happy after the game. But of course not. This is cranky Jim Boeheim. Let's play the clip.
But if I played Jesse and Kadari, we'd probably be 22-2 now. I just didn't see that. And I couldn't figure that out by myself after 45 years. I need a reporter to figure that out who's never played basketball and is 5'2".
Okay, so now we're going after the height of the reporters asking the question. I mean, Jim Boeheim has had a testy relationship with a lot of media members in the past, but I don't ever remember him calling out the height of the reporter. Boeheim is a surprisingly tall guy. He used to play basketball. He was a collegiate basketball player at SU. So he's kind of surprisingly tall. But man, I mean, you know, here's the thing. You would think if you're going to do this for 45 years, it's got to really bring you joy. It's really got to bring you joy. And sometimes it feels like Boeheim's, his attitude and how he views coaching is like everything's an annoyance. It has felt like everything's an annoyance for like 20 years. And yet here he is still coaching. Who knows when he's going to retire? You know, the administration at Syracuse tried to give him an exit plan. Okay, Jim, you're going to retire in 4 years. You've got 4 full years to plan your exit. 4 years should be enough time, right? Well, that was like 4 years ago. He's never going to retire, ever. He's like the Tom Brady of college football coaching. Can he coach into his 80s? Probably. I mean, everybody said, well, all right, this time around, he'll retire after his son graduates, Buddy Boeheim. I think he's got another younger son. He probably will just recruit him to Syracuse as well and coach him in like 12 years or so. And finally, Donovan Mitchell. Last night, him and Rudy Gobert in a Utah 131-123 loss to the 76ers were very unhappy about the officiating. Here is Spider Mitchell.
It's tough to go out there and see how we fight and compete and to have a game like that taken from us. And I'm never, ever one to blame a ref, to blame an official. I could say we could have done more, but this is getting out of hand. You know, there have been games like this that we've won. There have been games like this that we've lost. But this whole refereeing stuff and the way we're nice, we don't complain, we don't get frustrated. You know, we fight through things. And the fact that we just continually get screwed in a way by this. You know, like we won this game, in my personal opinion. You know, but like I said, I'm gonna give them credit. They won, whatever, cool. But like this is it's a consistent thing. And you know, the question is, can we do it? Can we sustain it? Are we for real number one? Like, yeah, the hell we are. And it's getting ridiculous, KK. That this is what's happening. You know what I mean? We have a whole second half of the season to go and get ready for, but like I'm sick of it. To be honest with you, we all are. You know, and I think this is something that just it eats me. It eats at me, man. And it's I don't y'all know what it is. We all know what it is, but it's really getting out of hand. It's really, really, really getting out of hand. And the league needs to do something about this.
Well, Donovan Mitchell could expect a big, fat fine for that. I mean, you can't go on a diatribe about the officiating and not expect to hear from the league office. Look, you know me. I'm always on the side of blaming the officials of the first exit in Loserville. So bellyaching about calls, blah, 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 is not something that I usually engage in. However, you know, last night there was some, or at least over the last couple of games that Donovan Mitchell is talking about, there's been some questionable calls, okay? And for last night, with 30 seconds to go in regulation, it looked like Royce O'Neal was called out of bounds after saving a loose ball. On the replay, it was clear that Royce O'Neal was not, in fact, out of bounds. However, the officials said the ball had gone out of bounds, keeping the ball with Philadelphia, and everybody was really confused on this one. That is going to end up being a real sticking point in as they talk about this game, and also including the disparity. The Sixers were given a clear advantage in free throws. They had 35 free throws to the Jazz's 19 free throws. So that's a pretty huge differential between the two clubs. Are there some reasons for Spider Mitchell and Rudy Gobert and the rest of the Jazz to be upset about last night? Yes. Do I think that this is some type of conspiracy theory against the Jazz? No. When Mitchell says this is always the way that they're officiated, they always get screwed. I'm not on board with that. He does say maybe we're too nice. Okay, that can factor in. Sometimes you do have to argue with the officials to get calls going your way. That's why coaches do it. The coaches don't do it just for their own health. They do it because they know it can give them an advantage to lean and rip on the officials. So maybe the Jazz need to go down that road. Maybe Quinn Snyder needs to go down that road. Maybe the entire team needs to go down that road. Last night, there were questionable decisions, were questionable calls, but I can't go so far as to say Donovan Mitchell says, I think we won this game. No, I think you lost the game. You still got to make the plays no matter what the adversity is, and you did. Sixers get the win last night. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS, or on Twitter, DA on CBS. Standing by this morning with your first batch of headlines is a kind sir. He is our friend here on the DA show, a smiling face, but also the deliverer of the news. It's Andrew Bogish. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
Hey, DA, good morning. So there was James Harden's 29 points, 10 rebounds, and 14 assists in his return to Houston, a 132-114 Nets win. There was Joel Embiid's 40 points and 19 rebounds in the Sixers' 131-123 OT win over Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz. There was Damian Lillard's go-ahead three with 13 seconds left as the Blazers beat the Warriors 108-106. And there was Zach LaVine in New Orleans.
Here's Levine, wide right against Harden, dribbles to his left, between the circles, dances off, wide to the right, to the rack, got it! Zach LaVine with 32 on another Zach attack to the rack. Onions, baby onions!
That's Chuck Swirsky on Bulls Radio. Onions. Levine with 36 in the 128-124 victory. It also helped that Zion missed 8 free throws on the night, which led to some post-game practice.
It can't go down like that. I got to be better in that situation. If I want to be one of those great players, I got to take a lot of responsibility, and I got to be ready for those moments. So, you know, right after the game, I just felt like I had to go back on the court and, you know, find my flow.
Elsewhere in the NBA, the Lakers lost in Sacramento without LeBron and Anthony Davis, 123-120. The Mavs won a slugfest with the Thunder, 87-78, and the Hawks won in Orlando, 115-112. They're 2-0. Since firing Lloyd Pierce. Jackie Bradley Jr. is reportedly signing with the Milwaukee Brewers. It'll be a 2-year deal worth $24 million with an opt-out next winter. Yankee manager Aaron Boone spent the night in the hospital after having a pacemaker implanted yesterday. The procedure went as planned. Boone was feeling well, according to the team. He could be back at work in a few days. Boone had been experiencing some lightheadedness, low energy, and shortness of breath. He also had open heart surgery back in 2009.
What do you guys think a pacemaker is? Technically, what do you think a pacemaker is? I mean, I know what a pacemaker does. It evens out the rhythm of your heart. But what do you think technically it is? What do they implant in you?
Like a little tiny thing. It's almost like a battery.
Mirage? I was gonna go with plastic with like a little timer like a bomb would have.
Okay, and what? They attach it directly to your heart? What do you guys think? Like there's little wires?
I'm assuming there's like some MacGyver? Kind of... a wire that goes to a nerve connection that goes through the aorta.
Oh, wow. You're even going to drop an aorta.
I'm going to drop an aorta. So you think grandpa had a pacemaker.
You think it goes through one of the valves. One of the wires is actually threaded through the heart valve.
I think a wire kind of gets threaded through either a vein or a nerve ending that then connects to there. I don't think you're going direct wire to heart. There's got to be some kind of nerve or vein close to the heart that serves as like the Holland Tunnel from Jersey to New York, if you will.
And it's a piece of plastic, you think?
I'm going to go with plastic, but maybe rubber. I mean, I don't know. It's certainly
and
not
what does
steel.
It do? Does it have like a charge in it, or does it tick like click, 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 click?
I think it probably has some kind of valve.
Uh-huh. Valve? Okay.
That ticks, but... in other words, can click into place to help out that rhythm of the heartbeat where it's kind of like waiting for that pause, if you will, of the heart. And it just kind of triggers from there to send whatever nerve triggers to help the heart keep beating in a rhythmic fashion.
But what's it doing in terms of sending nerve triggers? Like, is it a little battery in there? Like, how is it powered? Or is it like a stopwatch where it's like wound up and it just clicks?
So before I answer that question, I just want to know, do you know when you're trying to bait me in?
No.
Okay.
All right. That's what I'm prefacing.
I just don't want to look like a complete idiot where this is something where somehow the whole world knew how the pacemaker worked. And here's Mariah. Oh, I did not learn that.
No, I think it's one of those things that we take for granted where you're like, oh, he had a pacemaker. Like Aaron Boone now is a pacemaker. Yeah. And that will clearly regulate his heartbeat. We know what a pacemaker does. I just don't know how you put something technically is in your body, something that was built by man in your body to regulate your heartbeat, and I just wonder how that works.
I believe it is a battery, but it's not like they're putting a Duracell in there, a double A. Okay. So it's some kind of battery, because I actually think, and now this is flashback, unless I'm completely lost, that at some point my grandfather in my life, I remember him needing the battery changed in his pacemaker.
Okay. All right, so it's like the remote control.
Right, exactly. Banging the thing, come on!
Blowing in it, trying to get a new one out of the drawer.
Switching the two to go different ways, hoping right. that it adds a little extra... Zap.
There's those little batteries that look almost the size of a dime, the shape of a dime, that are even smaller, those little circular batteries. Sometimes
yeah, that's what's
those.
In my scale. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe it's that tiny, or maybe it's not even a battery. I don't know, folks. I mean, honestly, you could tell me anything right now, and I would believe it.
Would you believe it looked like a bomb, though, like Sean initially began? They sort of cut the red wire, and there's like a circular watch face with an arm going around, like ticking down to somebody's next heart attack?
And MacGyver puts it in.
Hey, look, you guys crush what you want. I didn't hear your theories on what exactly was in there clicking.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. But isn't it funny? Like, your manager, Mraz, has a pacemaker now, and you don't even really know what that is. I don't even really know what that is.
Yeah. We don't even know what a write-off is.
I will research pacemaker so we can have a more educated conversation on this coming up after the break. But if we have any doctors in the house or somebody that actually has a pacemaker, I'd like to know. You can tweet at me, DA on CBS, or call me up. I'd like to know firsthand what a pacemaker is in your body. 855-212-4-CBS.
I hope we don't have open heart surgeons that listen to this show, because they would get dumber, I think, truthfully, and that would not be good for anybody on the table.
You know, I'm never worried about admitting what I don't know, because I'm guessing there are heart surgeons that are like, how do you know the roster of so-and-so team? How would you know the intricacies of that sports news? You know, they just know other things. Everybody just knows their own kind of brand of things. I mean, some people don't know anything, obviously. But I think that these surgeons are probably like, okay, yeah, I can help you on that. I can shed some light on that.
Wait. I've been trying to tell you that some people know other things and not everything's important for a long time. Now you're using that as an excuse to defend surgeons, but you won't let that defend me?
Well, I think there's a baseline of third grade knowledge that, yes, everybody should share. And oftentimes you fall woefully short of that baseline.
Okay. All right. Just be careful with your wording, young man, because I think you're actually now becoming a little hypocritical when I tell you this.
Now, Rob tweets, DA, one big thing to know about a pacemaker is that if a loved one passes, the pacemaker has to be removed before cremation. I was told if you do not tell the crematory that in the end, you will be owning the pacemaker. So are we leasing these things? Is it like a car? Like, you don't just outright own that pacemaker once it's inside your heart or inside your body? Oh. Mraz took a stab at defining the pacemaker. It's not too bad. Mraz, you feeling proud to know that, as Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, noted on our internal chat during the show, that you were actually kind of right?
Yeah, I feel proud, but I'm not going to pretend like I wake up every morning and recite what a pacemaker is. I just kind of work through what I assumed it was. So I got lucky. I will admit I got lucky and I was close to having it, but that leasing thing is interesting. Are you telling me kind of like, I don't know, quarters, that there's only a certain amount of pacemakers in the world and we need to get them back and get them in somebody else? So when I inevitably need my pacemaker because I'm a fat slob, I'm going to have somebody else who passed away's pacemaker? That's kind of weird.
It would be very weird. I would think that everybody gets their own pacemaker, that you croak with the pacemaker, that taking them out of bodies and putting them back in other bodies, but perhaps they're really expensive to make. I don't know. So this is a good question. We have Dave in St. Louis who actually has a pacemaker. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, DA. Back in 1999, I started blacking out and falling. And after extensive tests, the blackouts and falls were diagnosed as what they call neurocardiogenic syncope, which basically is a fancy term for fainting or passing out. Mm-hmm. So when I had it implanted, they gave me a local anesthetic, mm-hmm. and they say that it takes usually between 1 and 2 hours or more. But mine took 45 minutes, and despite the local, I was awake the whole time. I mean, they, you know, covered up my face, but, you know, I took peeks and I was aware the whole time.
You took peeks at them implanting something in your chest cavity?
Yeah, it's just about a 2.5-inch cut.
Okay, so do you lease your pacemaker or do you own it?
I own it.
Okay.
I get it replaced every 9 or 10 years. I've had 2 replacements.
Okay.
I also have a, there are 3 different kind of pacemakers. One is a single chamber pacemaker, which has 1 lead. One is a dual chamber, which has 2 leads. And the third is biventricular. Mine is a dual chamber pacemaker, and mine is also a what they call an on-demand pacemaker, which means it's not going all the time. It just kicks in.
So it sends a little electroshock to your heart to continue to stay regularly beating.
Well, they don't. It's not an electric shock. It just... mine's set to kick in when my heartbeat drops below 72.
But has it got a little battery in it? It's got a little battery?
Yeah,
how does
got,
it?
Yes, it's got a little battery. The pacemakers are tiny, about the size of a matchbook box. Yeah, they only weigh between 20 and 50 grams.
Yeah, so, I would imagine that.
They're small. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't give electric shocks. Those are now, you get those now from those implanted defibrillators. Hmm.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for the information there. You see, this is why the Midwest is amazing. You just got tough SOBs in the Midwest. I mean, this guy's looking into his chest cavity as they're putting that pacemaker in. Mraz, you would just die right there on the bed.
How does that happen? I mean, maybe they can't knock you out because they need your heart beating. I can't do that.
No, your heart beats when they knock you out. If your heart stops beating, you're dead, Mraz.
No. I meant maybe they're worried about putting you under when they do the heart surgery because you won't, I don't know, respond. I don't know. I'm not a medical expert. All I know is this. If I could not take peeks at my chest cavity open as they're putting a matchbox-sized bomb in my chest. I couldn't do that. But I will say the dual chamber sounds nice. Very good on gas. It's the perfect one.
Can I just calm your fears here for a second? This is not open heart surgery when you're getting a pacemaker. He was not watching his bare ribs and his heart beating if he did peek around the curtain.
Well, what do they do? Go under a nipple bogus? They got to cut something open.
You got to listen. It's a 2-inch cut, and it's like arthroscopic surgery. They have all these tiny instruments that just are able to insert inside of you and then do the surgery there. That's why it can take a half an hour. If Aaron Boone had open heart surgery yesterday, he would not be back tomorrow as Yankee manager.
No, I know. That's absolutely right. But you have to admit that just even a 2.5-inch incision, which I think is what Dave said he had, is a little nauseating to see people go in and start working in your body with even a little instruments with an incision in your chest.
Right. It may not be your entire chest cavity peeled open like you're opening a book, but 2.5 inches, your chest cavity is still open 2.5 inches. Technically, isn't that open heart surgery?
No, it's not.
No, it's not. No.
Oh, forget it.
And also, too, Rob in the 320 has clarified his tweet. You will not own the pacemaker. You would own the crematorium because I guess it would then somehow burn. I don't know why, but it's not a leasing your pacemaker issue. Is you would then be rewarded with your lawsuit, I guess, by having the crematorium if you left the pacemaker in Grandpa when he got cremated.
Okay, got it. You see? Where you place the words in the construction of a sentence is very important. Very important. I mean, yesterday we were talking about whether Rob the 321's wife does the Elmo on the potty dance for her favorite meals. Is that Elmo's dance on the potty or she does Elmo's dance while she's on the potty? It's a very important distinction you've got to make. Do you own the pacemaker or the crematorium?
Words matter.
I'm still confused. The crematorium's going to blow up because that can't burn?
Well, if you could get yourself a crematorium by having grandpa be cremated with the pacemaker, then why would you tell them? Like, why you would let it happen, sabotage, and then you'd have a new business on your hands.
But the one thing we can't do is let Rob of the 321 hijack this show with his rationale or logic after we had a cardiologist on, because then we have just sunk everything we've just built up.
Sure, it's very accurate.
Well, you did ask somebody if he leases his pacemaker, so this began before Rob showed up.
Coming up later on to the show, we're going to have Mike Meltzer join us, SiriusXM host, because he has some strong opinions on what the Jets should do with Sam Darnold, and he's based in Houston, so he's got some good insight on the Texans and Deshaun Watson situation and Jack the Quack Easterby. Also, next hour, Sean Grandy is going to join us, the voice of the Celtics, to talk about the Celtics' recent rebound after the lows of last week. But I've got details on the Tiger Woods situation, and I have to admit that they're a little disturbing. Tiger Woods, they're not testing, they're not accusing, they're not speculating that he was under the influence. And I have to admit, from just light detective work on this, it's hard for me to imagine he was under the influence of alcohol or drugs at 7:30 in the morning. Okay? He was waking up, going to a photo shoot, a video shoot, with Drew Brees and Justin Herbert. He's not going to be liquored up. He's not going to be on narcotics either, again, going to a photo shoot. Now, he has had an addiction to pain medication, and is it possible he wakes up in the morning, pops pain meds for his back and his rehab and his body that's broken down, and would go behind the wheel of a car and go to this photo shoot, do this video work? It's possible, but it's not probable, that Tiger Woods is doing promotional video work for golf television and is doing it while he's loopy on pain meds. So I never thought that at 7:30 in the morning going to a video shoot, a film shoot, he's going to be out of it on pain meds. What's interesting here is that Tiger Woods has told authorities he has no memory of even driving that morning, has no memory of the morning. Now, they said they didn't smell any alcohol in his breath. They didn't feel like he was out of it. They are not even considering DUI, driving under the influence, that this was just an accident. Just an accident. Which I buy. Like I said, I think the circumstances would suggest that Tiger Woods would not be under the influence at 7:15 in the morning going to a film shoot for golf television. What I find interesting, if not convenient, is that Tiger Woods claims he doesn't remember anything of even driving. Because at the end of the day, Tiger Woods is incredibly lucky. Not only that he did not kill himself, but that he did not injure or kill others. His vehicle was going downhill at a place where there's a lot of vehicles that are speeding going downhill. Plenty of anecdotes and reports about how dangerous this stretch is. But Tiger Woods was going downhill above speed, crossed the median, did not brake, and rolled his vehicle 400 feet off the side of the road. He drove into oncoming traffic while speeding. Now, this black box that's going to be in his car that the sheriff's office has requested to investigate will give us some answers. We'll give them some answers. And that's important. Driving a 2021 car that's largely made or largely run by a computer, now we've got black boxes inside these cars because the computer can tell you exactly the speed you were going, if the brake was hit, etc. But I have to say, it feels incredibly convenient that Tiger Woods just simply doesn't remember anything about this drive because he did put many in harm's way. Thankfully, nobody was driving the opposite direction. Thankfully, when he rolled the car, it wasn't into another car or a pedestrian or a biker or what have you, or a jogger. But let's face it, Tiger Woods, by all accounts, even if his golfing career is over, is extraordinarily lucky. And as the authorities on the scene said, he's lucky to be alive because of that crash they've seen people die from. You know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. In fact, it could be probable that Tiger Woods was distracted while driving and speeding down that hill. Now, they said there were no brake marks, no skid marks. We didn't even hit the brake. Why? Who knows? But is it possible Tiger Woods is distracted by a phone? By a phone call? By a text? By a GPS? By anything? Is it possible that he had just lost his concentration, looked somewhere else, and by the time he's speeding down a hill, he's crossed over through the median and then immediately tries to correct it and just rolls it? Is it possible he just blanked out? It's possible. Everything's possible. But what's important here is piecing together how something like this happens, because Tiger was driving himself. And if he can't remember why or what happened when he drove into oncoming traffic and could have completely decapitated whoever was walking or jogging or biking on the side of that road, that's a problem. That's a threat. That means Tiger can't really be driving anymore, right? I mean, if you just have the ability to completely black out under no influence of drugs, alcohol, medication, etc., and you can just forget everything on that day, which Tiger says he doesn't even remember driving that morning, you're a danger to society. We just had this Britt Reid situation, okay? Britt Reid is the son of Andy Reid. And 2 days before the Super Bowl, he leaves the Chiefs practice facility and he's drunk. He says he only had a couple of beers and it was mixed with his Adderall. Whatever it is, he's out of it. There's a car parked on the side of the road because the car broke down and it was out of gas. There's another car that is parked next to that car trying to help that car. And a third car that has come to the scene to help that car. There's a little girl in the back of one of the parked cars, and Britt Reid smashes into that vehicle. The little girl sustains life-threatening injuries. Thankfully, it appears that she is going to survive, but recent reports say that she is going to have brain damage for the rest of her life. Britt Reid was under the influence. It does not appear that Tiger Woods was, but the same thing could have happened. If you just black out and you don't remember driving and you don't know why you crossed into oncoming traffic and rolled your vehicle 400 feet. If Tiger Woods claims he doesn't remember anything and doesn't remember driving, we'll never actually know what happened. We won't. And because he didn't hit anybody, he can't be held liable for the endangerment of somebody else. And that would be a shame if Tiger Woods does remember what happened and won't say it due to liability, because he has the opportunity to help other people learn a valuable lesson. If it was distracted driving, texting while driving, looking at your phone, what have you, it would be remarkably valuable for Tiger Woods to say, I did this, it was a mistake, don't do it. But if he just forgets everything, I'm not quite sure what we learned from this situation. I'm not quite sure what the big lesson here is. Don't speed en route to your video shoot. Obviously, more information will come out of this. We'll see how much more, though, it pieces together what exactly happened if Tiger says he doesn't remember. And maybe the crash causes, you know, a loss of memory. Perhaps there's a concussion suffered. Obviously, major damage done to his leg, so it's distinctly possible that the impact of the crash itself causes a lapse in memory. Mike tweets, seems like every time Tiger is talked about outside of golf, it's a not-so-pleasant situation, and it happens with a car. Guess you can't be great at everything. for Tiger. That's driving. He's had multiple vehicular incidents, that's for sure. Hitting the fire hydrant while under the influence of medication. That was the night that everything kind of spilled out into the tabloids. His ex-wife, Elin Nordegren, chased him down, smashed the back of his car with the 9-iron, and all of his tawdry exploits came out. Then he had the awkward parking on the side of the highway when he was completely out of it due to pain medication. And that's when he was arrested for a driving under the influence. And then this one. So you're right. A lot of bad car incidents for Tiger Woods. On the phones, we continue. Scott's in Melbourne, Florida. Good morning, Scott.
Morning, DA. How you doing, brother?
I'm good. How you doing?
Very well, sir. I heard you talking about Tiger and not remembering driving or anything like that. From 2012 through 2016, my wife suffered multiple seizures. Luckily, we've got them all figured out now. But in each one of her multiple seizures, she does not remember anything from that day. She doesn't remember going to work. She doesn't remember collapsing at work. She doesn't remember going by ambulance to the hospital. She just remembers waking up in the hospital the next day. So is it possible that he had some type of neurological? It absolutely is. And if that does happen, they can take your license away. And the first time it happens, they usually don't. But if it happens again, they'll pull his license for 6 months until a neurologist clears him to drive again. But him not remembering that day, I totally get it.
So what happened when your wife suffered her first seizure? What do they do to her driving privileges?
The first time it happened, they suspended her driving privileges for 3 months. But because of the severity of her seizure, she was out of work for almost 6 months. So it didn't really affect her because she couldn't drive. But a neurologist can take your license away or suspend it for a temporary period of time. And if it happens twice, they can suspend it for a year. And then a neurologist has to clear you to go back to driving again. But my wife's weren't, there's two kinds of seizures, epileptic seizures and non-epileptic seizures. One is the brain function that causes an epileptic seizure. The other is a non-epileptic, which is caused by something else. That's what my wife has. And she's had 9 brain operations over a period of 5 years. So,
wow, I'm so glad that you guys got that. So glad you guys got that figured out. Was there any hint when she suffered her first one that it was hereditary? Did you have any idea that maybe she could be susceptible to that?
No, it just one night we're sitting there watching TV and it just happened. And, you know, after that, we were careful. After that, I could kind of watch and see and I can kind of predict when it was going to happen. But she had a malformed artery and vein in her brain that they had to go in and fix. And it's quite a lengthy procedure. They actually had a Miraza like this, if he gets worried about a 2-inch incision in your chest, they cut a 3-inch hole in her skull and clipped off arteries on the outside of her brain. So,
wow. Wow. Well, that is great that you guys got that under control and your wife is okay. Boy, that is scary.
Yeah. But when you said about Tiger not remembering the day, I totally get it.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Well, I appreciate the information on that, man. Appreciate that very much. Interesting insight. Wow. Who would have known that the DA show would have turned into kind of like a sports radio version of Operation today, whereas we're learning so much stuff about the medical industry.
This is when the year ends, this might be the day I become the most educated. You know, we talk about learning something new every day. Mm-hmm. I, quite frankly, feel like I'm going through 7 years of medical school in these 4 hours on the DA show today.
So maybe Tiger did suffer a seizure. I mean, obviously anything is possible. I certainly wouldn't project that. Is it possible just he rolled the car, suffered a concussion, just doesn't remember anything from the entire day? I suppose that's in play as well. I guess the black box will give us some information here, Mraz, but right. if Tiger claims he doesn't remember anything, I'm not sure if you can really ever piece together then what happened.
You can't, and that's just where the fine line is. Unfortunately, in Tiger's case, he hasn't necessarily earned the benefit of the doubt when it comes to driving incidents and assuming that he won't remember anything, but this is a situation, a scary crash when you're talking about that we've seen people die from, to be able to black out and not remember anything at the other end seems like it's something that is quite common. So we probably will never know.
It's amazing, honestly, how many times Tiger Woods has avoided death. That's just, it's a shocking thing, you know?
Right.
Because some people drink, get behind the wheel of a car once, and then unfortunately, you know, have that fatal accident. Some people never drink and get behind the wheel of a car, and it just happens that a drunk driver comes the other way and kills them. Tiger Woods has been behind the wheel of a car in three we know of very dangerous incidents. The first one, he pulls out of the driveway. I don't know how fast he's going when he hits the fire hydrant, but if he doesn't hit the fire hydrant and gets into an actual two-way traffic lane, who knows? Or if he hits a tree and he accelerates and hits a tree and suddenly he's wrapped around the tree, could have died that night. Certainly a night where you are so out of it, you just park the car on the side of the highway, and we've seen the surveillance footage, the camera dash cam footage of Tiger. He's completely out of it. Of course, car comes up from behind you, doesn't see your lights, hits you, or you drive into oncoming traffic that night, or you drive off the side of a highway into a ditch. I mean, that's clearly a night he could have died. And this one, if he doesn't remember anything, drives into oncoming traffic, speeding down a hill, I mean, obviously could have died, or just rolling the vehicle, they said he's lucky to be alive. So Tiger has avoided death three very obvious times, and who knows how many other times he's been behind the wheel of a car and he's been out of it.
It is unbelievably mesmerizing that he's able to do that, because, as you said, so many people aren't lucky. And then if you watch the Tiger documentary, how about the fact that he basically has always been fascinated with having the snot kicked out of him and having near or faking death-like experiences, getting kidnapped and all that stuff with the military training he did for so long? This guy has danced with it a lot, some on his own, some obviously accidental, but it's unbelievable luck in many ways. It's crazy.
Yeah, and you know, I thought about Kobe, because we had the 1 year anniversary of Kobe passing away, and that's not in Kobe's control. You know, Kobe's not flying the helicopter. Kobe is a passenger, and he's entrusting the helicopter, you know, to do the safe maneuver and to be able to get through the clouds, etc. And for Kobe, he was very unlucky. And for his daughter, very unlucky. And for everybody inside that helicopter, very unlucky. For Tiger, he has been extraordinarily lucky on the flip side, because he has put himself in consistent harm's way. And thankfully, he hasn't hurt anybody else either during all of this. Andrew Bogish has our headline this morning. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
DA, hello again. So we've heard Donovan Mitchell complain about the refs in last night's loss in Philly. He might be right, but somebody should have also done something about Joel Embiid.
Tobias Harris to Embiid. Embiid is pushed by Bogdanovich 9 seconds ago. Dribbles beyond the arc, fakes a three, shoots a three. It's up and good! 5.9 to go. Embiid is tied it at 118.
Tom McGinnis on Sixers Radio. As he said, that three sending the game to OT, where Philly won 131-123. Embiid 40 points and 19 boards. James Harden went back to Houston, posted 29 points, 10 rebounds, 14 assists in a 132-114 Nets win. The Rocket losing streak is now 13. The Blazers fought off the Warriors 108-106 on another late Damian Lillard three. The Bulls out toward the Pelicans 128-124. The Raptors played without head coach Nick Nurse, plus no Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, or OG Anunoby because of COVID. They lost to the Pistons 129-125, and the Pacers won in Cleveland 114-111. TJ McConnell, 16 points, 13 assists, and 10 steals. He set an NBA record with 9 of those steals in the first half of that game. Yankee manager Aaron Boone had a pacemaker implanted yesterday. Dr. Sean Forash said the procedure went well, and Boone could be back at work in a few days. The Brewers reportedly signing former Red Sox outfielder Jackie Bradley Jr. It's a 2-year deal worth $24 million. Bradley can opt out after year one. And when The Athletic published the first harassment allegations against Angels pitching coach Mickey Callaway, Cleveland president Chris Santinetti said they heard nothing about this when Callaway was their pitching coach. This week's update from The Athletic strongly called that into question, and now Antonetti is saying nothing.
With the ongoing investigation, the most important thing is that investigation is able to maintain its integrity, its thoroughness, its impartiality, and I don't want to do anything that would jeopardize that investigation. And as importantly, we look forward to learning what that investigation reveals.
It sounds like you shouldn't be looking forward to this, because it's not going to be good news for your organization. One story is called Callaway's Mistreatment of Women, an Open Secret in Cleveland. Callaway has denied the allegations. He remains on leave while the Angels and MLB investigate.
Bogues, what's your read on this? Do you believe that the Indians had no idea about Mickey Callaway's behind-the-scenes exploits?
Well, I think the issue becomes whether they knew how bad things were and they chose to cover them up, or they just did not respect and value the information they had correctly, because it seems like everybody knew in Cleveland. And if people in the regular office knew about, just regular staff members, then I don't know how the manager and the team president didn't know. And even with the Mets, I mean, a dude emailed the Mets when Callaway was their manager and said, he's hitting on my wife and sending her pictures and whatever. And it went up the chain and then it died. So was it like a full-on cover-up, or again, just not thinking this was a big deal and that he was just, you know, oh, he's just a gross guy, like we don't need to do anything about this? There's a difference there. I don't know how big of a difference, or whether one is, you know, that much worse than the other, but it seems like everybody knew and chose not to handle it the way they should have.
I think rules changed in baseball and in sports. I think for decades, centuries, young athletic males that have women around them and that chase women were just assumed to be horn dogs. And if you were a horn dog, you were just part of many horn dogs. And so this is just athletic culture. I mean, young, rich, good-looking, athletic men chasing women is just what every coach, every organization, every owner, every GM, everybody expects from most of their team. And that Mickey Callaway was a former player, and that you're on the road and you probably have all of these coaches or managers or players at some given point in time with some chick that reaches out, some woman, some aggrieved husband, some ex-boyfriend. They probably hear this stuff a lot, and they just have always dismissed it because it's, well, boys will be boys, and this is just what sports is. And I think the rules changed. I think suddenly we started waking up to the Me Too movement and all of the stuff that happened with Harvey Weinstein and things like this in Hollywood. And then sports had to wise it up. And it's like, no, it's not okay if your manager has been sending porno videos to chicks and they're like, we don't want them anymore. You know, back in the day, maybe that's not a fireable offense 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Today, that is. And I think that's what changed. I think the Indians were probably operating from a series of rules that were set in place way before they ever dealt with this. And now the rules of engagement changed and they have to be more sensitive because, like you said, the Mets, the Indians, they're getting multiple reports on Mickey being a lewd, kind of disgusting hornball. But that's not a fireable offense 10 years ago. Being a hornball is not a fireable offense back then. Today, because of social media and because of more sensitivity, it is. And now they're like, well, we didn't know. We didn't quite know. I think they knew. It's just that they weren't going to react to something like that. I mean, and now you have to react to something like that. And I think it's a good change that's happened.
I mean, it's definitely a good change. It's definitely long overdue. And I would also, too, just, I mean, from a very insensitive, like, PR standpoint, I don't know how you let yourself say we knew nothing about this when there's paper trails in both places of them knowing things about it. I mean, the Mets kind of said the same thing, and yet then acknowledged that, oh, yeah, that's right, we did actually look into something that Mickey was alleged to have done. So, like, I just don't know why they can also continue to paint themselves into corners by saying the wrong thing as they're trying to save face publicly.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Jed Hoyer situation again. For the Mets, they probably Jared Porter, sorry. They probably knew that Jared Porter was a hornball. They probably knew, as it seemed like most people in baseball, I shouldn't say that, but they probably knew that Porter had some of this stuff. But again, sending a bunch of texts to try to date a girl is not a fireable offense 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. Today, it's a reason not to hire a guy if you're overly aggressive sexually over text message, etc. So These guys grew up in a different time. They're still doing it. They're executives in management now, so there should be a different set of rules. But my guess is most of these teams have dealt with a lot of this for a long time and just haven't really cared all that much.
College hoops last night. Number 10, Villanova beat number 14, Creighton, 72-60. But lost guard Colin Gillespie to what could be a bad left knee injury. Number 11, Florida State blew out BC, 93-64. Number 19, San Diego State, now on an 11-game win streak after a 71-62 W at UNLV. And from the NHL, the Coyotes beat the Kings. The Blues beat the Ducks, both by 3-2 scores. And now, we're stunned.
Yeah. It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So this is an update, not a fresh stunned to a news. We have talked about frozen iguanas falling out of trees when it gets cold in Florida, some other crazy animals that now call the Sunshine State home. Well, some of those animals are not supposed to be there and are messing up the local ecosystem, so the government is finally responding. Multiple species, including Burmese pythons, iguanas, and monitor lizards, are being moved to a prohibited list. You'll only be able to bring them to Florida for exhibition in places like a zoo or research facility. Good. However, if you currently own one of these animals, you do not need to give it up.
Oh.
You'll need a permit, but that's free, so not a big deal there either. You will have to get into compliance, though, with outdoor caging rules. And if you sell iguanas or certain types of lizards, you got to clear your inventory now because you can't sell them as of June 20th, 2024. So expect iguana price, a lot of iguana sales over the next 3 years to get them off the shelves in Florida. And again, all is to protect other animals that these bad boys eat, the environment, and even man-made structures like fountains and gardens, because some of these things can burrow underneath and like compromise construction. Oh. So they are wreaking havoc throughout Florida, and finally enough is enough.
It's just the most Florida thing ever, that they had to put down rules because the animals were overtaking everything. Everybody, we've got to do something here. You know, Adam Beasley, who is the beat reporter for the Miami Dolphins, is a friend of mine down to the Miami Herald. He's got a friend in Fort Lauderdale with a boat, little boat, just tiny feet, seats, maybe 4 to 6 people. So we took it out down one of those canals in Fort Lauderdale and out to the ocean. And as you're coming down through the canals with all the houses at either side of you, they were like, I'm like, what is that dinosaur over there on the dock? I'm like, oh, that's just an iguana. I'm like, that's an iguana? That looks like the size of a small pony. Yeah, that's just an iguana. There's nothing that'll eat the iguana, so they just grow and they eat everything in their way. They eat all of the bugs and the plants. And I'm like, oh my God, look to the left, another iguana. Look to the right, another iguana. There's iguanas everywhere. They're like, yeah, it's a real problem. Iguanas are just everywhere taking over the ecosystem. As you said, they're not used to freezing temperatures. So on the rare cold snap in Florida, they climb into a tree, they freeze, they just drop on top of you like a toaster oven. They're huge, too. And they got pythons down there. They got iguanas down there. They got all this crazy reptile amphibian type stuff that's not native to there. But because it's Florida, it's just all over the place. And because it's, you know, because it's warm and hot and humid, these animals just run roughshod over the entire state. So thank God they had to say no to this finally.
It's ridiculous, DA. My cousin, whose house I just went to in Lakeland, they live right behind a wooded area. And the husband was telling me they have all sorts of big snakes that aren't obviously from Lakeland, but he said are just pets that have been dropped off. And they also say that they're starting down south and they're getting less room for them to navigate south. So they're now pushing north in Florida.
Oh my.
And that they're just finding any wooded areas they can as they keep pushing more and more north. So this is a problem where it's not just going to be South Jungle Florida that has this going on. I mean, we could have snakes in the panhandle before too long at this point.
Yeah, if they don't get their act together in Florida, we'll have iguanas in New York by 2024. Okay?
Also, it's going to be like the Mets. They end spring training. They end up coming back up here.
And I just got to love this Florida commissioner saying, I'm very sensitive to the people in the pet trade. I'm not! What, you're going to protect Tiger King? Those dysfunctional idiots? You've got iguanas and pythons running the state. Who cares about the pet traders? Who cares? I'm sensitive to the pet trade. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the mothership's advanced analytics.
All right, so earlier this morning we were discussing what exactly a pacemaker is, because it turns out that Aaron Boone needs one. And so we asked, what exactly is a pacemaker? Could you describe it if you needed to? And we actually had a cardiologist call us on the show and give us the dissection, the discussion, the description of it. For you guys, 73% said not a chance if you had to explain how a pacemaker works. 26% said, of course. That only adds up to 99%, so 73 and 27, we'll say. It was 73.3 and 26.7.
75 and 25, my bad.
Well, Pete, did you actually send me the advanced analytics?
I did today, yes.
Just came through now. So I got 75 and 25. Okay, 75% said not a chance. Studies have shown that the average for pacemaker implementation is 75 years old. If you've got a pacemaker, do not keep magnetic devices around them. Yikes. Also, do not place headphones by a pacemaker. Who knows why? And avoid staying near anti-theft systems for long periods of time. So don't hang out in a block where the car has an anti-theft device on it. Who knows? Your ticker could go crazy. Mraz also proclaimed early in the morning that he guarantees he'll need one at some point in life. So you got that to look forward to, Mraz.
Yeah. By the way, the first non-hot take I've had in a long time. I think it was nice of you guys, neither of you guys, to come in and deny that that was a possibility. Every other take I have in the show, Mraz, you're nuts. I say I'm a fat slob that's going to get a pacemaker. Everybody backs off. You know what? He's right. So that was real comforting for all of you.
Well, look. At the end of the day, I guess what's obvious is obvious. How can you fight it?
Yeah, if the pacemaker fits.
Is me getting a pacemaker as obvious as Trevor Lawrence over Zach Wilson?
I think it is.
Like, could we get Chris Sims tomorrow to say, I tell you, I think DA is going to have a pacemaker before Mraz. That would be really... Then we could talk about the hot take.
If in 20 years, what's more likely? We go, boy, we were wrong on Trevor Lawrence, or boy, we were wrong. Mraz got into great shape and didn't need a pacemaker.
Do I need a pacemaker before Trevor Lawrence's career is over? Another prop bet.
Will Trevor Lawrence's NFL career outlast Mraz's need for a pacemaker?
At this point, Brady's career is going to outlast my need for one. So,
I mean, and since you've gained weight since trying to lose 100, we're definitely going in that direction.
What happens first? Tom Brady retires or Mraz needs a pacemaker?
Maybe I'll drop dead and Brady can just throw me in the river in Tampa Bay and nobody will catch me.
A 2021 draft or a short?
And then my mom could come on and complain that nobody disrespected my body.
And then Tom Brady ends up on Jimmy Kimmel. I don't know. It just seemed to be fun to throw a dead body into the river. I don't know.
He was already dead.
I was having a good time.
I was drunk.
You know, Florida has already limited the exotic animals, so one more manatee thrown in there couldn't hurt, right?
Yeah, then the next morning we have a green party where he does six of the top three favorite moments from Mraz's funeral. It's a whole thing.
This one's so dark. This one's so dark. All right, this folds into our epic fail this morning as I didn't know exactly how a pacemaker worked. I kind of knew what it did, but I don't exactly know how it works or what it's made out of. So we quizzed everybody here on the show. Could you describe what a pacemaker does? Here it is, your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Right. I was gonna go with plastic with like a little timer like a bomb would have.
Okay, and what, they attach it directly to your heart? What do you guys think? Like there's little wires?
I'm assuming there's like some MacGyver kind of wire that goes to a nerve connection that goes through the aorta.
Oh, wow. You're even going to drop an aorta.
I'm going to drop an aorta. So you think grandpa had a pacemaker.
And I'm going to be a crotchety old you-know-what if I last another 40 years.
You think it goes through one of the valves? One of the wires is actually threaded through the heart valve.
I think a wire kind of gets threaded through either a vein or a nerve ending that then connects to there. I don't think you're going direct wire to heart. There's got to be some kind of nerve or vein close to the heart.
Not understanding because you're stupid.
That serves as like the Holland Tunnel from Jersey to New York, if you will.
And it's a piece of plastic, you think?
I'm going to go with plastic, but maybe rubber. I mean, I don't know. It's certainly
and
not
what
steel.
Does it do? Does it have like a charge in it or does it... Does it tick like click, 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 click?
I think it probably has some kind of valve.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That ticks, but in other words, can click into place to help out that rhythm of the heartbeat where it's kind of like waiting for that pause, if you will, of the heart, and it just kind of triggers from there to send whatever nerve triggers to help the heart.
I don't think that's true.
Keep beating in a rhythmic fashion.
But what's it doing in terms of sending nerve triggers? Like, is it a little battery in there? Like, how is it powered? Or is it like a stopwatch where it's like wound up and it just clicks?
So before I answer that question, I just want to know, do you know when you're trying to bait me in?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
That's what I'm prefacing.
I just don't want to look like a complete idiot where this is something where somehow the whole world knew how the pacemaker worked. And here's Mariah. Oh, I did not learn that.
No, I think it's one of those things that we take for granted where you're like, oh, we had a pacemaker.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
I read the story yesterday online. Aaron Boone needs a pacemaker. I'm like, okay, glad he's going to be okay. And then I started thinking, I don't even know what a pacemaker does. Glad he's going to be okay, but is it plastic? Is it metal? Is it electric? Is there a battery in there? Is it a pulse? Is there a motor? Is it like a stopwatch? Is it like a turn old school hand watch? What goes on in there?
You thought he might have to get wound up every morning?
Like, does it need solar?
Or turn
energy
to his bench coach? Quick, give me a quick spinny. I'm getting tired.
Hawaiian Tony Danza tweets.
All right.
So do the iguanas and steaks moving north from Florida. Does that mean Peter Schwartz will be asking for free swag/practice pucks from the NHL expansion Manhattan Iguanas once they begin play in 2024? Has he already mentioned them fishing for free tickets? Well, it's a good question. It'll be part of, I'm sure, Meat on the Bone coming up here in a future segment on the DA show.
I think that's already an indoor lacrosse team he covers, so I don't know.
That's true, actually. Wiggins tweets, oh, okay, DA, classic media, blasting a pro because his conclusion flies in the face of conventional thought. Groupthink, anyone? Man, Wiggins, here's my point on Chris Sims or anybody else, Mel Kiper, saying that Zach Wilson's a better pro prospect than higher the draft board. 32 GMs disagree. All of the guys whose careers are on the line, and they're not all right, let's face it, plenty of busts all the time. But not a single soul with the number one pick would take Zach Wilson. So what's the debate? That somehow the media's smarter than every guy employed by the NFL? It's not like there's five guys that would take that risk or 10 GMs that would take that risk. Nobody would do that. So why would we even argue that point if conventional wisdom is not just the media's conventional wisdom, it's the guys making the pick. The entire league would take Trevor Lawrence number one. Mraz brings up the point of what a Green party would sound like from Connor Green after his funeral. And the other thing, DA, I don't know where to get flowers. I mean, really? I've never had to buy flowers for anybody. I can't figure out how to do this. Do I go to a garden? Do I go to a florist? Where's a florist? And the other thing, DA, deli meats. I don't like these deli meats. I've never liked deli meats. And now I've got to eat deli meats after a death. It's not the frame of mind I want to be in when I eat deli meat.
We don't even need Connor to do it. We got it.
I just want to go home and play NBA 2K. Is that too much to ask? All right, that'll do it for us this morning here on the DA Show. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti, on the wheels of steel and audio, a director. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines and Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Tomorrow morning, Ian Rappaport, NFL Network's going to join us as free agency looms. Be good and be good to one another. I'm DA. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership disconnects.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.